Morning, everyone. Okay, we are going to do our third and final week of our Joshua study. And before we get going, I just wanted to quickly review last week what we talked about. So last week we talked about, why God sent out spies, and how it wasn't because he was trying to figure out if the land was able to be conquered or what the response would be, but because he already knew what the response would be, and that they were unable to believe, and so they disqualified, and so he set this up as a stumbling block. And we said, why were they unable to believe? Well, it was because they spent their time in the wilderness and the testing time. They spent it complaining and murmuring. They spent it being unthankful, with idolatry in their heart, and that their whole life was centered around just themselves rather than God. They weren't trying to figure out how to get closer to God. They were trying to figure out how God could make them closer to themselves, if that makes any sense. How they could get more out of God to make their life better and more comfortable. And that is a bad direction because, we'll never be happy anyways with that. There'll always be more ways to be more comfortable and things of that sort. But we talked about a stumbling block being, a God-ordained situation that arises in the path of a disqualified Christian to remove them from the course. And I failed to mention my scripture for that last week, and it was Ezekiel 3:20, one of the scriptures I had. Ezekiel 3:20 says, "Again, when a righteous man turns from righteousness and commits iniquity, and I lay a stumbling block before him, he shall die." And I just read the first part of the verse there just because it's just to show I'm not making that up. God is the one who puts stumbling blocks down, as solemn and scary as that can be. It's all the more warning for us to really check our hearts and really get before God and say, "Lord, if I've been doing these things that the children of Israel have done, that they did, I want to stop that and I want to get on course. I want to have a good response right now before stumbling block comes up and I can't even help it. I just go the direction of my heart." We want to say what David said, created me a clean heart. Like what Joshua did, he had a clean heart, and Joshua had he was an overcomer. He believed, he feared God and not the people. All these things caused him to have that good response, same thing as Caleb. So, that's a little recap of last week. I mean, we kind of said, I had a little illustration. I looked at Steve and I asked him if he thought I could jump up to the ceiling and grab the rafter, and he said no. He didn't believe it. And the truth is everything he's become, everything he's believed, everything he's learned up to that point caused him in that moment to make that decision to believe it's not possible. And same thing with us, we can't just get to the moment somewhere in life and make good decisions based upon what you believe and change it all then. Right now, how we're acting day in and day out affects our beliefs, affects our mind. So we need to be careful about that. But I want to get to the book of Joshua now, because we've been in a little bit in Exodus, we were a little bit in Numbers and Deuteronomy. And this week, we're going to be looking at Joshua as he's taking over the leadership role for Moses. And so my first point would be Joshua's real enemy. This is taken from Joshua chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, and I'll read that real quick. "Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all these people, unto the land which I do give them, even to the children of Israel." Verse 3 says, "Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that I have given unto you, as I said to Moses." Now, there's a lot of enemies in the land of Israel. In the Promised Land, as I meant to say, because right now it wasn't really so much inhabited by the Israelites yet. It was inhabited by the Jebusites and the Perizzites and the Perizzites and the whatever you want to call them. I'm just making up names at this point. But there's a lot of enemies there. I don't have them memorized. They were all there, but which one of them was the most dangerous to Joshua? Does anyone have an answer that can rattle off? It's kind of a trick question. So I'm just going to say, I don't think any of them was Joshua's greatest enemy because they were already beaten. And it's just interesting, right? So it's just such a weird dynamic there that none of these people pose the greatest threat to Joshua. If we really dig into these first three verses, it ends with almost like a challenge to Joshua. He says, just so you know, everywhere you decide to tread your feet, you, Joshua, everywhere you go, you're going to have victory there. The enemies aren't the problem, but you have to battle yourself in your own fears, in your own comfort, your own, inhibitions. And there you have victory. But Joshua had to fight himself, I think. And that's the same thing with us. I really think that when Jesus died on the cross, he conquered death. He conquered sin. I think about sin a lot for this, our personal sins and our iniquities. I think about still the devil, how he's part of that. He conquered the devil. He conquered the world. He conquered sin and death. But everywhere where we decide to tread upon and go and obey God, there's already victory waiting for us. I think the biggest problem sometimes is that the devil would love to get us to think that the mountain's too big, the desert's too long and too dry, and that we're not ready for that kind of stuff yet. It's just better to hang back where it's comfortable for a while until we get stronger. And I was thinking on the way up the hill here, I really don't believe that we should live with these illusions that the trials God gives us take the strength right out of us. You do some things. Me and Stephen were on a roof yesterday, and I will be honest, that took the physical strength out of me yesterday. But in the spiritual realm, but today, actually in a sense, even though I'm still sore, I do feel a lot stronger already. I know the muscles I worked, as hard as that was and as difficult as it is, you get stronger. It's such an illusion. You're like, I could do this work, and even the spiritual, I could let God bring me through these difficult trials, but I'm just going to be left with nothing afterwards. I just feel so dead after. No, the truth is that when you go through a spiritual trial and you're obedient and you have the good attitude, then God just made you that much stronger. In the next trial that comes, you have the potential to face that trial the same way you did the last one and see God's hand move again. And so Joshua had to really face this really difficult battle with himself, because this victory was conditional wherever he stepped, it said. And I think fear was a big one for Joshua. I think fear was huge, because how many times did the Lord have to say to Joshua, be strong and of good courage? Courage. And I'll just say something about fear real quick. There's a lot of things that bring us fear in life. No matter how tough we are or how daring we are, everyone has their fears. And I love the definition of courage, that it's okay to be afraid, to have fear of something you're about to do. The question is whether or not you do that thing, because fear is really kind of like an emotion that can come in, and we have to say, you can't say, well, if I'm afraid of this thing, I may as well just not do it because apparently my heart's not even in the right spot, blah, blah, blah. That's the devil. But if we are afraid to do something, like maybe witness to someone that's out in public and you're like, they're going to think I'm crazy, or maybe this isn't the right time or whatever, and you're kind of afraid, you're facing fear, but you just do it anyways. My suggestion would be just render that fear, pointless and harmless to you. Because fear is, I always say, it's like holographic. Like you can walk right through it if you want to. But the image of it is scary. It keeps you to stop. We can't let fear keep us from taking enemy ground. We also can't overthink the power of God, because grace, in a sense, can be very simple and very powerful according to how much we believe. And in Mark 9:23, Jesus said unto him, if you can believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. I think it goes directly back to this statement like he made to Joshua. Everywhere The sole of your foot treads upon, I've given that to you. He said to us, you know, I've conquered sin and death. You know, all sin is conquered. You know, Jesus conquered every single one of them. But if you can believe that, you know, and if you can get rid of your fear, then all things are possible to you. All victories are achievable. And if we keep telling ourselves, you know, I've been capable, or, you know, struggle with this one. You know, I struggle for 10 years in the same areas, and I'm, you know, maybe this is just a slow death to this thing, and I try to put it all together in my head. And the truth is there's just times when you got to say, if I do the right thing and make that decision, then God is with me in that. You know, if I look back and see that I had a victory, then that was grace. But I can't look ahead and wait for grace to get it done for me, and it doesn't work like that. It works backwards. And we'll see that more, actually, in this chapter. Well, I mean, in this study. But unbelief is very dangerous. You know, I don't believe that God could conquer this thing in my life or things of the sort, because in Matthew 13:58, this is when Jesus was in his own town, his own country, and God couldn't do many miracles at all because none of them believed. And Jesus, it said about Jesus, he did not many miracles there because of their unbelief. And we can pray for miracles, but our belief indicator is what determines God's hand. And there's certain things in life. We were just talking about this yesterday, but I'm inspired by, you know, like videos I've read and inspirational stories. You know that non-Christians, people who don't even believe in the power of God, often are 10 times more disciplined than even Christians. And I say that because, you know, sometimes we can pray. This is something I laugh about, but for a while I was just praying, God, you know, just give me the power, the grace to get out of bed early, you know. And it's funny, right? There's plenty of people in the military who do not know God, and they're up every morning like this. You know, they're up, they're exercising, they're eating right, they're doing things, and they're like this. But sometimes we believe that God, the devil's just got a hold on me, man. And this is a long battle I've been battling for 25 years to get out of bed early, and it's just such a bondage I'm in. Well, the bondage is that you don't believe it's possible. It's a mental bondage, it's nothing physical. So if I said, you know what, I just got to get myself out of bed and put my foot on the floor in the morning and then go out and push the coffee button and not come back, then I just achieved that victory, you know. And I didn't really have to pray and fast for it. I just had to have discipline. So, you know, there's things where we need deliverance, and there's also things where we need to make a decision. And I would say we should probably start by making decisions and work our way towards the difficult things. Speaking of myself here. My next point comes to verse 4 of Joshua chapter 1. And I've titled this one, What is Your Coast? Because you can't just say that because Jesus has conquered sin and death, that I can go out and do anything I want, anytime I want, in any place I want, and no matter what, it's always going to be successful. Because it doesn't work like that either, because God is, he's a specific God. I would say there's, in a general, there's things that are written down in the Bible that we're told to do, and I can do any of those things. Be kind. I don't have to pray about that one. But when it comes to where I'm going to live and what ministry I'm going to have, like, these things are picked by God. So we have to be wise to know what God's saying to us. So what is your coast? In Joshua chapter 1, verse 4 says, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even to the great river, the river Euphrates, and all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea, toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. This is right after the Lord just said to Joshua, everywhere you tread your feet, you'll have victory in this domain and range. I think this is important because it's easy to kind of go out and do the things that maybe we feel like doing, but sometimes God picks things for us that are pretty difficult that we wouldn't have picked for ourselves. The reason there is to work on our own hearts. So we have to be very careful to know, there's a part, I think, back before this, a couple books in the Bible that talks about the sacrifice of location. And I joked around, I think it was the first week when I talked about being a missionary to Hawaii, you know, how I would do it, you know, even if I had to give up these winters. I would go to Hawaii if that's what God wanted, but he hasn't spoken that to me yet. So I could see myself getting a little comfortable there, you know, as nice as that'd be. Maybe a two-week short-term mission trip would be nice, but I do believe that sometimes God sends us to places and to tasks and to things that really get rid of things in our heart that are shouldn't be there. So I want to just make this quick point. We all have our own coast. What is your coast? And sometimes your coast is something that you're tired of. It's like year after year, you've had your coast, you've had your boundaries, and they're difficult. You know, I always found that there are certain people I worked with who, you know, just couldn't stay put for very long. You know, it was a couple months in a position, and they're antsy, and they're like, I just feel like I know all this stuff now. I want to go on. I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to get promoted. And I just, people just, one of two things. They either complain, and they get a bad attitude, and they never leave their position. They get inevitably trapped there, kind of like the children of Israel in the wilderness. Or they leave the company. It's one of two things. But they don't get promoted that way. They don't go on to new things that way. And so they weren't content with their coast, and they didn't realize, like, it's one thing to learn your position. It's another thing to have experience in your position, you know, and to build wisdom in your position. So I just want to say that we do need to stay in our lane, you know, and we need to get in our lane if we're not in our lane. When it comes down to it, God's in control. He picks these things. I think about King Josiah when he left his lane. It was like one of the only moments in his life where we could look back and say that Josiah missed it. He died because of it, because he tried to go fight the I think the Egyptians, and did not turn out well for him. So I wanted to qualify my last point of you know, going out and having victory anywhere, you know, make sure we know our coast. So my question is, what is your coast? And have you thought about that? Because sometimes if we feel like we're pointlessly doing something year after year, that thing loses its value to us in our mind. That thing feels unimportant in our mind. In the moment, we get a refreshing. Me and my wife talk about this too, because for me, it's like being in the secular work field. It's tough for me sometimes, because after time goes on, I just don't know if I'm contributing in life the things I'd like to contribute as much. But she reminds me, like, that's my coast. That's my place right now. I'm learning things I need to learn for the future. And all of a sudden, I get a kind of renewed strength. I'm like, okay, I can keep doing this because this is what God wants me to do, and this is where he put me. So I think that if you take a little time, if you're getting really discouraged in your life, to pray, Lord, is this where you put me? And he says yes, and he might tell you why. That helps. And if you find out that somewhere along the lines you took a wrong turn, then maybe God can help you get into your coast. And then peace will come back into your life. So moving on to the next point is, I called it assured of God's presence. And I took this because in my Bible, it's the way it's titled of actually this first chapter of Joshua. I really like that, though, assured of God's presence. In Joshua chapter 1, verse 5, he says, there shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. We find that with Joshua over and over again, God is assuring him of his presence with him. And he kept saying, just like I was with Moses, I'll be with you. And he said that because he knew Joshua was afraid. He knew that there's things coming that would be really difficult for him. But he wanted him, above all other things, to know that he wasn't alone. And I love how it says, I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. And we love that line, right? And from God, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you. Because it's a game changer. It's a huge game changer. Because now it's not about your enemy. Now it's not about your challenge or your obstacle. Now it's about whether or not God's with you. And you know, to our natural mind, it's generally going to be terrifying to do God's will. I can tell you that much. You know, whatever God is putting on our hearts, you know, and it could be something like very, we see as fundamental. I'm just going to pull out one that's like financial, like tithing. You know, the times when things are tough, you know, and you don't have as much as you think you're going to need because it's a rough time. And the devil starts playing with your head and gets you to add up the numbers, what 10% really looks like to your income. And you're like, you know, the devil plays with your head, right? But then when you flip it around and you say, God's in charge of all this money, that's where it all comes from. He's our real employer. And I get to keep technically 90% of this and not put it in the tithe bin. So that's good. That's a good percentage. But if you flip it around and say, this is all my money, and I got to give up 10% of it every single time, that's a different mindset that brings fear into your heart. What about this thing, and the car just this, and the heater that, and blah, blah, blah. 10% looks like a big number, but 90% is a big number of money that the God has actually entrusted us to take care of responsibly, and he only asked for 10% of what's already his. Because we're assured of God's presence. We're assured of God's power and his goodness in our life that says, hey, it's okay. Money can come out of nowhere. We've all seen that happen, right? I mean, when the times are the worst, you're like, I just can't believe it. I never could have done this math. I never could have planned for this. But when me and Louisa are buying a house, that's what happened to us. And we just kind of knew we were doing the right thing, but we weren't sure how it was all going to line up. And we just kept looking at each other saying, how is this money keep coming? I forgot about that check coming in, and this happened, and that. We don't have to pay for this thing anymore. And before we knew it, we had plenty. And I really learned then to really put my trust in God. And I'm sure there'll be more things to, you know, struggle with in the future, but I have to be sure that God's presence is with me. So this is a really important point, I believe, because if we ever make the decision to obey God and sacrifice what was just enough, you can gain access to the provisions of an infinite God. And you might say in your life, whether it's your energy, your time, your money, it doesn't matter what it is. Often we feel like we have just enough. It's kind of the feeling we walk around with. And we don't know if we have time to do one more thing. That's what God's telling us to do. But it's through that sacrifice, and it could be one day of your time. It could be tenth of your income. It could be, I'm just trying to come up with a couple examples on the ground there. But anything, when you do that, and you relinquish and you say, okay, I think I'm just going to trust and put it out there, you just open the door to God's help and his hand in your life. And the real question becomes, can you really afford to not do that? And I think it was actually Pastor Tucker's class, I think it was Marriage and the Family. He said, I can't afford not to tithe. And I always remember that, that's just with money. But what about time? Because time is more important to me than money. And time works the same exact way. I hold my time like this, and I'm like always afraid to, commit to this and do that and these things. But I found out that God's in charge of the time. God's outside of time, and just like he's outside of money. I'm in it, so I can't see it clearly, but he always gives me what I need. Struggle with that a lot, too. I struggle with time because with work and different things going on in the house, it all piles up in your brain, and you're like, I don't know if I have time for anything, and it affects your decisions in life when you look at it like that, and I'm trying to really see it differently lately. I'm trying to think that God can make time come out of nowhere, and he has. So we want to be assured of God's presence. And I picked this little passage in Psalm 91. It's a great picture of being assured of his presence, and I really like this. But Psalm 91, verses 1 and 2, this is what it's like to be assured of his presence. He that dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, he's my refuge, he's my fortress, he's my God, and in him will I trust. So if you dwell in the secret place of the Most High, I always get like a picture of like an umbrella, And I ask myself, maybe I start the day under that umbrella, but are there times in the day where I start to stick my head out, And if there's stuff coming down and I had a dream one time that there was just stuff coming down that was like acid falling from the sky. And I was underneath a covering, and And I kept being so tempted to like look out and see what was coming. And if I did, then I would get scorched by this stuff. And I thought about this verse with that, you know, the world is full of the spirit of the devil. It's full of people who think wrongly about life, and their philosophies can get into our brains and mess with us. You know, it's full of music that when you walk, go to the store or at work, it will bring you down and get you to think wrong. It's just full of stuff that we can't afford to have in our system, you know, we can't afford to grapple with that stuff because it's just coming from the devil. And I think about the shadow of the Almighty, and I just tell God, you know, when I go to work, when I'm going to the mall, no matter what I'm doing, I just don't want to stick my head out and get stuck with that stuff in my brain or in my heart, you know. So I think we need to be assured of God's presence in our everyday life. Every day when we leave the house or when we're in our house, we want to be assured that no matter where we go, we're protected by this shadow of the Almighty. And it's a beautiful sight if you think about it. But it's not about the challenge or the deficit. It's about if we're close enough that day to feel His confidence, to feel His protection. You know, you can look at life scared to death of the things that are coming. And that's very natural. You don't have to be a bad person to do that. But you can also look at a world that's about to crash for you and feel God smiling because He's so confident that everything's going to be okay. And that's where your trust and confidence comes from. But you got to be close enough to that person who is your confidence to feel the confidence. It's hard to feel someone's confidence when they're in another room. So if you're standing right next to them and you get their facial expressions, you get the tone in their words, then you feel what they're feeling. And that will be contagious. I'm going to move on to last part of this kind of here. You know, because Joshua passed his test. His heart was clean. He didn't complain. He believed. So was he locked into God's next move? You know, going across the Jordan and conquering these, I'll call them the parasites, because I said that earlier, I really like it. these people in the country, you know, that, you know, was he ready to do this, and was he locked into success? Well, I would say no, and what God's really speaking in my heart right now is that there is a move coming where things are going to be a new wave, and that sometimes the devil likes to put us like on a teeter-totter, right? Now, there's always two ways to miss something, you know. We talked about how to miss it last week, you know, how to not miss it, actually, you know, how to keep our hearts straight. But then there's like the other end of it I feel like we need to talk about, that God's showing me as well, that says we also need to not miss it in this other way. And I think it's expressed pretty well here. If we go to the third chapter of Joshua, Joshua 3, verses 3 through 4, this one's just kind of titled The Presence of the Lord First, not passed this way before. So Joshua chapter 3, verse 3 and 4 says, they commanded the people, saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests, the Levites, bearing it, then you will remove from your place and go after it. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Don't come near it. Don't come near the ark. Leave 2,000 cubits between you and the ark. As they're walking, and when you see about that distance, remove from your place. Go after it. And going back to verse 4 here, that you may know the way by which you should go, for you have not passed this way before. In other words, the children of Israel were going in circles for a while, but now they're coming to a new spot they've never been to before. Okay? With a leader they've never really followed before. And, you know, there's some truths hidden in these words here, I believe. And my point is, when God begins to move, we have to remove ourselves from our place. You know, it's impossible to follow God into new things the same exact way we are right now. Now, what doesn't change? What doesn't change is God's holiness. What doesn't change is God's heart and His mind and His doctrine. Never changes. God is God yesterday, today, and forever. He will never change. But we have to make a fine distinction between traditions we follow and the way we do things and God's holiness. You know what's happening out there, and we all see it very well, is that distinction is not being made, okay? People seem to think that in order to follow God into this next move, which isn't God's move most of the time, right? We have got to change our definition of holiness. And we've got to assimilate with other people who are doing things according to the world. And then that is one way to miss God's move. I would guess that you're going in a different direction. But traditions, okay, not morality. So what's a tradition? Tradition would be like every morning I like to brush my teeth before I get in the shower. That's a tradition. Could I swap order and still be totally okay in my life? Yes, you could do that. You know, if God wanted to, you know, let's come up with something else, I don't know. like I heard someone say, I don't remember who we were talking to, but someone said there was another country, they do services on Friday, you know, and it sounds weird because we've always said Sunday is the Lord's day, but, you know, there's traditions we have, you know, like maybe it's I thought it was kind of funny, but, you know, there's someone said, was asked to do a testimony. They said, why don't I have my suit coat on? Well, you know, that's a tradition. It was a joke, but, you know, it was just showing it's okay, right? So, you know, we got to watch out for these traditions because the Pharisees missed Jesus himself through tradition and through hearts that were wrong. But they worshiped their traditions. And I just got to say, you know, I mean, they were what we would call, I think what Jesus was referring to in Luke 5:37, he said the Pharisees, he said, no man puts new wine into old bottles, or the new wine will burst the bottles and be spilled, and the bottles shall perish. The move of God is the wine. But new wine must be put into new bottles, and both are preserved. And you know, removing from our place, I think, might refer to God eventually will say some things to us that are difficult and uncomfortable, and we got to be obedient there, right? We got to stay so close to God's heart and his mind that we don't miss that. I thought it was really interesting, kind of encouraging how it said, you know, it takes us with a grain of salt, but 2,000 cubits measure, like let that be ahead of you. And I was thinking about how the church age is 2,000 years, you know, and there's that space between the move of God and them of 2,000 years. And I think that God's getting ready to move because it's been over 2,000 years since Jesus was walking around on the earth. And maybe we're getting ready to go over into a new place, you know, as a church, like as a church. And so I really would love to see that be soon. And so would you. But I'm going to look at the words here. It says, go after it. You know, we might think chronologically, go after that. Well, yes, that's true, but also, you get a command here that says, go after it. Don't stay where you're at. You know, follow God's commands and do what he says and hear what he's saying. But I also love how it says in verse 4, for ye have not passed this way before. And it's true. When God moves in a new way, you can say one thing about that. You have never seen it before. You have never, ever experienced it. You can't guess what it's going to be. It's kind of hard to plan for it. The only way you can plan for it is to be very close to his voice. So we can't say we know what it's going to be like. There's no point in projecting that because we've never been there before. But John chapter 6, verse 18, this gives us a good example here. I really love this passage. John 6, 18 through 21 says, and the sea arose by reason of a great wind that blew. This is when there was a big storm. So when they had rowed about 25 or 30 furlongs, so 25 or 30, they see Jesus walking on the sea and drawing nigh to the ship, and they were afraid. You know, they'd never seen that before. Again, Jesus was moving in a way they've never seen him move before. Walking on the water is very supernatural. So their natural reaction was to be afraid. They're like, this is kind of scary. I've never seen Jesus walk like this before. They didn't even know it was Jesus at first. The moment he said, it is I, be not afraid, they willingly received him into the ship. And immediately the ship was at the land where they went. Again, what was the real obstacle? Was it how far they were from the shore? Was it this, the wind and all that? No. It was whether or not they're assured of God's presence. It's the same story over and over again. The moment Jesus spoke and said, I'm moving in a way I've never moved before. I'm walking on the water. But I want you to know this is me. This is me moving. They were okay, right where they needed to be. They were the ones who were out of place. And it was his voice that got them on track. And so my point is that we need to hear Jesus speaking to us in our life, personally, corporately, in our families, that he's with us. It's I, be not afraid, especially when new things are happening. Because one of two things, either we won't know that it's Jesus and we miss the move, or we follow something else with our eyes and miss Jesus walking over here because this one seemed more logical. We can't do either. So, moving into the last point here, this is when they're crossing the Jordan. And I'm going to spend my last 5.5 minutes just talking about this because there's some interesting wording here too. So they're walking across the Jordan, getting ready to walk across the Jordan, and they got their command on how to do this. And Joshua 3, verse 13 says, and it shall come to pass as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests that bear the ark shall rest in the waters of Jordan, then the waters will be cut off and they'll heap up. So the waters will... I thought it was interesting because we can draw a parallel here between when they crossed the Red Sea and when they crossed the Jordan. So that at the beginning of their trip, before they saw as many acts of God and before they were that far in their walk with God, the waters were completely dry. I won't go and read it because of time, but yeah, the sea was totally dry, and it says explicitly they walked through on dry land. Here, the miracle of God was not going to happen until their feet were in the water. There's a difference, right? It takes a little more faith to get in the water and says, well, as soon as you're in there, it'll activate my power. But I'm going to make a statement that a step of trust often activates the hand of God. And when we're further on with God and he's testing our faith further and he wants to know we really trust him to go on to this new move, then I don't know if the water's going to be totally dry before we can walk across. I think sometimes you've got to get in and believe God in the middle of a situation that doesn't look right. You know, they might have been saying, hey, if we step in here, we could be swept away. And we're carrying an ark. I don't think this is a good idea. I'm pretty sure this thing isn't supposed to get wet. We can protect God's presence so much that we stay where we're at. But what if there was something even bigger on the other side? And what if we had to get in the water first? My point is that God knows how to protect himself. The point is if we're on track with him. So we don't need to do that and protect something that God is in charge of. So... you know, I just want to make a relation because if I don't end this with a challenge, then what am I doing up here, right? I'm not here to make us smarter. You picked the wrong person for that. I'm here to challenge us and say what God's telling me to say. So I believe there's a time to pray and a time to act. Now, we know Daniel had to pray for 21 days before anything was going to happen. We know Elijah had to pray for, was it 7 days, I think, before anything was going to happen. There's a time to pray, but can you imagine if we found out that someone needed a bunch of help, you know, and their life is crashing and that, you know, something terrible and we just had every power to go help them, but we're like, oh my goodness, this is terrible. I'm sorry this happened to you, Stephen. I just want you to know, even though there's a hole in your roof, I'm going to be praying for you. Yeah, you know, I will say a prayer for you. I do hope everything turns out well and God has your back. You'd be like, ah, thanks, man. Appreciate it. You know, there's a time to pray and there's a time to act. And there's certain things that God just said in his word, just do it. I already said do it, you know? Keep your heart clean. Go preach the gospel to all nations. Love your neighbor as yourself. You know, help those who are in need. Help the poor and needy. Help the sick. You know, all these things. We don't have to pray as much about those things as maybe we think. You know? I mean, look at the valley, right? you know, and just to be honest, I know we pray a lot for the valley, but I do think that maybe sometimes we got to get our feet in the water. I'm not saying start a bunch of things that God's telling us not to start, but I think sometimes we need to differentiate and say, like Jesus said in Mark 9:29, this kind can come forth by nothing but prayer and fasting. That type. But that's only one type. You know, some of the types, he just walked right up and healed them. He walked right up out of faith and a believing heart and God's power and his Father's power that was going to happen because that's what God said. And he had the heart to believe it. I think prayer in the wrong context is a lot easier than action. I think prayer in the wrong context sometimes even evades responsibility to act. Maybe we don't know how to do it yet. But that's okay. Let's get our feet in the water in any way you can. My challenge is, number one, what is your coast? You know, because there's some people who God has called to be a prayer warrior, and that is their post. That's their coast. That's what they're supposed to do. And I respect that 100%. Maybe I'm preaching to myself because I think I'm called to be a prayer warrior, of course, but I don't think that's necessarily my coast. I think I'm supposed to talk to people and help people and be out there. And so I think we also need to pray and say, God, not just what is my coast, but how do I get my feet in the water? You know, what do you want me to do? Have I prayed about that? Have I trusted you with my time and my money enough to where if you tell me to get in the water, I'll do it? Because it starts right here. You know, I'm really talking individually. You know, in any way, as a church, it's made up of a bunch of humans individually who come together. But I do believe that to go in the right direction, everyone's got to be hearing the voice of God also themselves. And I need to start with me. So as I'm up here, I don't want to be like Naaman, who was told to get in the Jordan for healing, for the power of God to be released, a step of trust in order to activate the power of God. And I said, I don't want to get dirty. You know, I'm going to protect the ark so that nothing happens to the presence of God in my heart. Well, maybe that's not what God's saying. And I think I need to be very careful to hear God's voice and be a follower of God's power and his love in my life and not of my own fear. And I know maybe it's not the most comfortable message in the world, and I believe it because I feel it. I feel it's not comfortable. But I think we need to be realizing God will never penalize you for an act of faith. God will never take away his power from your life if you're activating out of trust and hearing his voice, because that's faith. And so I'm going to end it with that challenge. I would say, you know, let's make sure we have our post settled. We know where the coast is in our life. Remember that wherever we tread on our feet, we have victory. And number three, that we're praying on how to get our feet in the water. You know, it could be something very simple. Maybe I've heard people say, God just told me to go out once a week and hand out tracts. So God told me to do this little thing, and the power of God that's released through these small acts of obedience when we get out there and get our feet in the water is just unmentionable. You know, God can do anything he wants. So I leave you with that challenge and myself with that challenge. And I want to pray that God will give us grace to do it. Heavenly Father, I thank you for the study, all the things we learned from Joshua, how he conquered a lot of enemies, but he also had to conquer his own enemies and his own self at times, Lord. And I pray that you would give me grace, Lord God, to start doing the things that I was just talking about. I know you're speaking to me before anything else. And if that hits home to anyone else who maybe has lost their coast or has stopped believing that the victory is already there, or maybe has known they want to get their feet in the water but have been afraid to do it, I pray that you'd give us that extra surge of strength. Maybe we could even come together and stick together if we're struggling with the same things and help each other to do it with the body of Christ involved, Lord God. And I know that you're good, and I know that we struggle to see that, but we believe it, we love you, and we thank you for this word. And I pray that you would give us that strength to always see clearly what you're doing, where you're moving, that we wouldn't miss it through fear, but also wouldn't miss it because our eyes are somewhere else. We love you, Lord, in your precious name I pray. Amen. You may be dismissed.